Let us be mindful that what we normally do in our own homes is visible to everyone else. Please try to limit your behavior that may be distracting. I'm going to turn off the chat to everyone and private chats. You can still chat to the hosts or co-hosts. And as you know, raise your virtual hand found in reactions when there is question and answers. And sharing your name is optional. If you didn't hear at the beginning, this is completely being recorded with audio. So we will now have our presentation by Karen. Karen, please take it away.
I will. Sarah, can you make me a co-host so I can share screen?
Oh, did you jump off? Okay. Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I was there and then I wasn't.
Technology, we love it.
So beautiful today. I'm actually so grateful that we have Zoom because a lot of recovery would have really been imploded or exploded or whatever you want to say. So Zoom is wonderful when it works right. Am I good?
Oh, there you are.
Ta-da. And hello, everyone. And as soon as I'm co-host, I will start sharing screens. Oh, there we are. Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Karen. I'm codependent. And this month I had an 8-year birthday in codependent. So I kind of have been getting a feel for this by now. Take some time. But I'm going to talk about the patterns today. The patterns mean a lot to me because this is what my problem was. This is what made me overdrink. My use of the patterns and all those things, when I couldn't make something happen or keep something from happening, then I would just drink over it. So that kind of became a problem later. But the patterns, where are we? There we are, Kindle. All righty. This is right out of the section, chapter 5 on commonly asked questions. What drives our need to control and avoid others? Many of us ask, aren't some of these behaviors healthy? Talking about the patterns. When they talk about behaviors, they're talking about patterns. When they talk about your defects in the book, those are your patterns. When they talk about your shortcomings, those are your patterns. It's the use of your patterns. The defects and shortcomings sound so negative to me, but really all that means is your use of the patterns. Somebody said something really neat one time. They said, if I'm not practicing patience, tolerance, and acceptance, then I'm practicing a pattern. It's one of the two things. You're either in acceptance, patience, tolerance, or you're practicing a pattern. You're trying to control something, avoid something, deny something, comply with it, or just using your low self-esteem to tell you you've got it coming. Yeah. The answer can be found in the motivation for our behaviors, for our use of the patterns. Our behaviors towards ourselves, others, and our higher power may be appropriate if they are by choice and with healthy boundaries. I'm going to give you an example that's different from the one in the book. I used to work, it seems like for all my life, I worked in an office full of women. That's a dangerous area. I know the women in here that have had this before, worked in an office full of women, can comply with this one. There's always going to be personality problems in there, usually because I caused them, but be that as it may. Let me see, stop that share. And I'm going to go to a different. And I didn't realize that I caused most of the problems that were in that office, but I did this by using patterns. And here's the difference. Here's my motivation. Let's say, for example, your boss, the controller of the company, has appendicitis. All of a sudden, she's in the hospital. Should I send her flowers or not? I have two different motivations here. One is love, one is fear. I'm either acting out of love or I'm acting out of fear at all times. Love, if I really like her, feel sorry for her, if I have empathy for her, if I've been in her position before, for example, I might want to give her flowers out of love to make her feel better, because maybe that, you know, I'm thinking she would probably like flowers. I'm guessing at that, but still, my motivation is good. If, on the other hand, I send her flowers because I'm afraid if somebody else sent her flowers before me, they might get the next promotion instead of me, that's fear. So it really does, everything that I do comes down to my motivations for doing it. And then you're kind of careful. Oh, yes, Brittany, I will get back to you in just a moment. I do chair a meeting on Sunday nights. It's in Incline Village. It's a Zoom only. It's a book study. And it's Sunday at 5 o'clock Nevada time, if you'd like to join me there. We just do the steps and that's it. That's important. Okay. In the book, in the blue book, we talk about defects of character, shortcomings, skills that we used, our skill sets from when we were children. Those are the patterns. Defects are not defects. They are the patterns that you use to try to make something happen or to keep something from happening. All of these patterns are control items. This is how you control the situation or to keep yourself from being uncomfortable. I spent my whole childhood trying to make myself comfortable. This is really neat. One of my sponsees wrote this, and it's all of the patterns on one page. Whoa, so handy. And I use this a lot just to bring it up real quick and see what am I using right now. And I'm going to bring this up and leave it up for a while so that you can ask a question about one of those patterns if you don't really understand what they mean by that. Okay, that's going to be any question that you have. Raise your little virtual hand and let's get on it. Because I did a whole presentation about this using my own experience. Some of them I didn't relate to, and I had to ask, what do they mean by that? You know, chat, Nevada 5, I missed the rest. Sure, I'll share the link, Brittany, thanks. Excuse me. We have pollen up here in at Lake Tahoe is beautiful. Once a year, the pollen releases and everybody for about a month. Very sexy. So my favorite pattern was avoidance. So let's start with that one. Anytime you have a question, we will not make it through all of these. So anytime you have a question on which particular pattern you're confused by or don't quite know what it means, let's raise your little hand and let's get to it. Okay, let's see, avoidance patterns. Codependents often act in ways that invite others to reject, shame, or express anger toward them. I didn't understand this. I thought everybody was picking on me. I thought this is the easiest four-step ever. All you need is an index card and a felt tip pen. You just write, I was born, and everybody started picking on me. That's it. There's your four-step. I'm joking about that. But in my mind, that was true. I couldn't understand why people were attacking me all the time. And I always felt like I was on guard and I had my armor on and I was deflecting things all the time. And why would you say something like that? Here's the problem. And anytime I'm not sure what the problem is, all I got to do is look in the mirror. When I went back home, I used to wear my suit of armor to protect myself against the insults that I knew were coming. Looking back, I made them walk on eggshells around me because anything they said to me, I took offense at, and I would either retaliate or act hurt or something like that. And so they would have to really tailor what they were saying and just to make sure we don't piss Karen off, because we don't know what's going to happen when that occurs. And I was extremely sensitive. Here's the problem. I was raised between two thinner, smarter sisters. That's my entire problem right there. I was the middle child. I was pudgy, and I was about a B-minus, C-plus student. So I already knew that I was not as good as the other two. This wasn't really related to me speaking-wise. Nobody ever said, you are stupid. They would say other things like, you know, if you would just work hard like your sisters do, then you would be smart. Well, as it turns out, and I love this part of my story, I love, love, love it. My sisters and I took IQ tests one time. We did it the same place, same time. Who's got the genius IQ? That's me. I'm a Mensa member, and it's just that I think logically. They're good memorizers. I'm not, so they got A's. And here's another thing about perfection while I'm on this. Perfectionism is an illusion. If you are you know, the perfect report card, perfection, right? All A's. That's according to someone else's opinion of you. It doesn't, there's no standard that says, if you do this, you will get an A. There's nothing like that. It's just that particular teacher's opinion of your performance is an A. Some teachers are easier to get an A off, some are harder. So it's not a reflection of you, it's a reflection of them, how they see you. So I was about a B minus C plus student because I wasn't a good memorizer. I did terribly on tests, even if I knew the stuff. I just didn't do well. So when I found out that I had a genius IQ and they didn't, that's when things started to turn around. My sponsor told me as soon as I got into quota, question everything you think you know. Everything that you think you know about yourself so far, question it. You know, am I stupid? And if I am stupid, who told me that? Where did I get that idea? I had this idea in my head all my life that I was being called stupid, but I wasn't. I already knew that I was fat because my two sisters were skinny. I'm not even going to call them slender. I'm not even gonna grant them that. They were skinny. Okay. And I was pudgy. So sandwiched in between those two, if they were skinny, that meant I was fat. And I got little side things from my mom calling me a human garbage disposal when we had company, stuff like that. And that stuff sticks around, you know, it really, really sticks around. Excuse me for continually clearing my throat. I apologize. Sound like Greta Garbo. Anyway, so I avoided people a lot. And I also would act in ways that invited others not to want to be around me. I wouldn't, looking back on my behaviors then, I'm surprised I had any friends at all. And the only friends that I did have, the people I called friends, were people that would co-sign my behavior. You know, anybody that would think the same way I did, agree with my grievances, then they were my friends. But, you know, that's easy. And I always said when I went to go pick a sponsor, somebody advised me, pick somebody that's not like you at all. Because if you pick somebody just like you, you're going to stay just like you. And the whole object of this is to stop behaving the way I was. Judge harshly what others think, say, or do. Yeah, it's odd. My behaviors would switch between playing God and making you play God. When I was playing God, nothing you said was smart enough for me. I was smart, especially when I got in recovery. Oh my goodness. When I got into AA in particular, I was smarter than everybody in my family. That's just the way it was. And so I had to really watch this. Judging what others think, say, or do means that I need them to change. I was always looking for insults myself, and when I seek, I will find. I would be outraged and tell my current sounding board, that was my friends, my sounding boards, how distressed I was so they would have sympathy for me. And this worked with everyone but my sponsor. She would listen very patiently, give me that little smile of understanding. Okay, that sounds terrible. And boom, off the table. Wait a minute, I'm not done with this. I've got a lot of grinding to do on that one. I got at least a week's worth of meat left on that bone. And she would dismiss it and, okay, let's get to the real problem. Real problem is me. It's my perception of things. Avoid emotional, physical, or sexual intimacy as a way to maintain distance. Oddly enough, I didn't really get this one. Because I was always trying to pull everybody all the way in and trying to make them my best friend and my boyfriend for life. And as soon as I would meet somebody, if they called me twice, that meant we were getting married or, you know, something weird like that. But I wasn't very good at relationships. I was actually after my initial fear, I was relieved that I'd been put on a man ban by my sponsor. One of the things that I used to use was my cell phone. I'd get in a meeting and bring a book or a cell phone so I didn't have to interact with people because I didn't think I was very good at it. And that was a lie. I lied to myself all the time about myself. I would say, well, you're not very good at just casual conversation. That's not true. I was really afraid that it wasn't going to go over very well. You know, maybe I was going to tell a joke, but that was mistimed or something, and people wouldn't find me interesting. All of these things that I would tell myself. Nobody was telling me this stuff. I was telling myself. Allow addictions to people, places, and things to distract them from achieving intimacy in relationships. Yeah. When I'm addicted to a person, it's like an addiction to alcohol. An addiction to a person is different from a real relationship, but it's very similar to an addiction to alcohol, drugs, overeating, overshopping, overworking, over anything. Anything that I do in excess, that's my higher power right there. It's compulsive and it makes you euphoric. And it also ends in withdrawals, even in relationships. If you're addicted to a person, when that ends or starts to go sideways, the panic takes over. Oh, I'm going to lose something I think I need. So you start using the patterns. It's pretty simple. The patterns were my way of living. These are my defects. Used indirect or evasive communication to avoid conflict or confrontation. Absolutely. Vagueness was my favorite misdirection. Oh, yeah, let's get together next week. Yeah. The silent treatment qualifies here. Telling everyone but the person involved that you disagree with them. It's like gathering a posse. I would get a bunch of people to agree with my point of view, whether they did or not. They probably didn't. They just wanted me to shut up. But getting a posse together so that they would not like this person on my behalf. That's mean. I didn't see it as mean. I thought it was protection. My perception of all of these behaviors, I thought they were useful and necessary, and they weren't. Diminish their capacity to have healthy relationships by declining to use the tools of recovery. Heck yeah. I know what to do when I'm upset. I know what to do. It's in the book. It's right. It's very simple. You get in touch with your higher power. You call your sponsor. You work the steps. It's simple. It's not easy when you're upset. That's all I'm saying. It's hard. It's because I get about once a year, I get righteously angry at somebody or something, some injustice that's been done to me. I have this weird feeling of fairness. That's a little bit overblown, but that's a different story. Because sometimes it feels good to be upset. It feels like I'm being misunderstood. I'm right. They're wrong. That's it. And I won't get any help for it. And I can stay in that little puddle as long as I want. I don't need to, but I can. I don't do anything of the things I know how to do to resolve the issue until it hurts bad enough. You know, when the hurt outweighs the fear, I go ahead and do the fourth step, the fifth step, and I end up making an amend because whatever pissed me off, it wasn't that thing. It was something from my past that was unresolved. Let me see if I have a good example of that. Yeah, actually, I do. I have a big thing about integrity. I never had any before, but now that I have some, if somebody pushes my integrity button, that makes me angry. So I was working in a room with no windows, small room, only four of us in there. And the boss, she liked me, but she liked this other girl better. They've been working together for 20 years. So, you know, I'm a newbie. And I'm also 6 months sober. So I'm like a raw nerve. So that's just really a bad mix. But anyway, this other girl came in late every day, between an hour and half an hour and an hour and a half late every single day. It was weird. And she would come in making excuses, oh, the dog, then this and that, and the traffic and the snow and all that stuff. And every single day she was late without question. And my boss would just, roll her eyes roll her eyes in my direction. So I would know that she felt bad about that or whatever. I don't know what she was trying to do. And then one day I came in 5 minutes late. I'm never late. I'm never late of my own volition. You can make me late by you know, sidelining me or the, you know, whatever happens. But I was 5 minutes late that day and I was just, I'm racing in the door on two wheels. And I immediately started telling my story. I'm so sorry. And my boss stopped me mid-sentence. She says, I don't care why you're late, Karen. You just get to work or something. You know, really insulting. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. That is not fair. this other girl is late every single day. I'm late one time for 5 minutes and I get dressed down in front of her. Okay. So I had a problem with that when I didn't call my sponsor, didn't call my higher power, didn't call, you know, didn't do anything. I was right. She was wrong. That's it. Sat on that one for 3 days. And that's a long 3 days. At the end of this, I had to get a hold of my sponsor, had to do everything. Finally had to give up. Okay, give me the pen for crime. I'll write it down. Fifth stepped it with my sponsor. And she said, well, were you late? I said, yeah, I was. But, and every time she would say, yeah, but you were late, right? Yeah, but she was later than I was. Yeah, but were you late? Yes, yes, I was late, period. I had to disregard what this other girl was doing that has nothing to do with the current situation. Yes, I was late. Had to go back to my boss and tell, you know what? I overreacted the other day. I apologized. I was late. The end. Won't happen again. I apologize. And I was never late after that. But boy, was that a hard one. You know, it was a hard one because this other girl was in the room when I was making my mend. But I was free after that. I was free. My side of the street was clean. Whatever this other girl does, not my deal. Has nothing to do with me. But that was a really big one for me when I was upset. Didn't like that at all. Okay, suppress their feelings or needs to avoid feeling vulnerable. Yes, I think it's called biting your tongue. And this was supposed to create martyrdom for me. You know, I'm supposed to go straight to heaven and have a castle built in my honor. Because, I mean, that's I'm being so generous here. I'm giving you the more than the benefit of the doubt. I'm just being marvelous here by biting my tongue. My sponsor told me, yeah, now, you know, that's great. But what you're supposed to do as a healthy person, what healthy people do is they speak their mind, period. And you can say anything that you need to say to someone if you say it in the correct manner, using I statements and in a loving manner. You can say whatever you need to say. As long as it's the truth. Okay, make sure it's the truth first. I find everything out the hard way. But the biting my tongue was not helpful. My relationships consisted of one standalone person and me a standalone person. And we were each doing our own things. But then when it would start going in a different direction that I didn't care for or I thought was going to end me up being single, then I would start using the patterns to pull him back in. There was no such thing as an honest conversation. That was, you know, that was too dangerous. I got a lot of trouble being honest when I was a kid. Maybe it was just one, because if I was asked by my mom or my stepdad, tell the truth. Okay, here it comes. But they didn't like it. You know, when I told the truth to my stepdad after he smacked my head for drinking out of the tap, you know, I was just drinking out of the tap in the sink. So what? Smacked my head, almost broke my tooth. And so I'm sitting there, but apparently I had this really deadly expression on my face. He said, what are you thinking about right now? And I said, my real dad. That got me nowhere. Okay. But I was telling the truth, things like that. And I could have said that if I'd had a coda prior to that, I would have used an I statement. Well, I'm feeling really upset right now and thinking that my dad probably wouldn't do that. Whatever, you know, whatever. But I didn't have coda then. Gosh, could have used it. It's one of those catch 22s. If I had had coda then, I wouldn't need coda now. Whatever. Refuse to give up their self-will to avoid surrendering to a power greater than themselves. Wow, this was so hard because a leap of faith isn't from point A to point B. It's just from point A. I didn't like that. I didn't like not knowing what was going to come next. I have to know what's going to happen next so I could control it. And maybe I didn't want to take that leap off point A. What if point B is no good? What if point B lands me up in, I don't know, what if a Peace Corps or something like that with the bugs and the dirt and everything? What if that happened? My sister was polite enough to tell me I'd probably aged out of that something. Well, okay. So at least that's off the table. But I did not want to give up myself. Well, now I've heard it said that if you want to have a spiritual awakening, don't go looking for one. No, they put it differently. If you go looking for a spiritual awakening, you probably won't have one. My best advice on this, and I know I'm getting unsolicited advice, but take your hands off your own life. Just take your hands off of it. give your higher power a chance to move on in there and do what's supposed to be done. A friend of mine talked about in a meeting one time, she said, I'm feeling really good today. I'm floating. And everybody kind of looked at her odd, you know, and she said, no, I'm floating today. Normally I'm swimming upstream and thrashing to get to something that I need that's just right up there sitting on that rock. I can see it. I need to get there. And I'm just thrashing until I finally get so tired, I roll over onto my back and float down to where I'm supposed to be. That's the idea of a higher power for me. Let go of your stuff. How's your higher power going to affect any change in your life if you still got that grip on it? And this was hard. It was hard for me. And it was scary. You know, I want to know what's going to be demanded of me before I give myself away. And it reminded me when I wrote that sentence, it reminded me of a t-shirt that I saw one time. This is so awful. It says, show me the candy first, then I'll get in the van. I'm not stupid. So awful. Oh, that's terrible. Okay, erase. Believe displays of emotion are a sign of weakness. It's like big boys don't cry. You don't show any emotion around my house. That was dangerous. If you were too happy, it's, you know, I was supposed to calm down. If I was unhappy, what's your problem? So it's just, it was a lot easier to just give that blank face. It took me a while when somebody would ask me, how are you feeling? When I got into CODA, I don't know. I had to get that feelings chart, the faces on it to it. I feel like that. And it would put the word down there, aggravated, anxious, whatever, rather than just bad. You know, that blanket, I'm feeling bad. It's there's a lot of things underneath that. Withhold expressions of appreciation. I would never compliment anybody else because if I lifted them up, I was putting myself down in my mind. So there's a lot of really interesting uses of the patterns that just aren't valid. But I used them anyway. Is there anyone who would like to bring up one of these patterns or something that they are confused about or something that didn't quite ring true? And let's take a look at it. Just raise your little hand. And if not, I'm just going to keep going because I can talk about CODA forever. Let's see. What is denial. Denial is a good pattern. See, all of these patterns are extremely handy. They're very handy. Mine was the lazy one. I used avoidance because it was the laziest one. You used to, you know, just avoid the whole thing altogether. You don't have to do anything. But denial is, denial is fun. Have difficulty identifying what they're feeling. I talked about that a minute ago with that faces chart. You know, I really could not identify exactly what I was feeling. I just got that blanket bad. I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling depressed. Well, there are other, where is that feelings wheel? Hold on just a moment. Let me bring this up because this is I just caught onto this a little bit ago from another CODA meeting from somebody else's presentation. And I got to show you this. It is awesome. Let's take a look. Feelings wheel. Here we are. Not only is this visually beautiful, but it helps, okay? So I'm feeling bad right here in the middle. Oops, don't highlight. Bad. Stop it. There we are. Here's bad. Okay, from that, am I feeling bored, busy, stressed, or tired? There's your subcategories right there. And from that one, if I'm feeling stressed, am I overwhelmed or am I out of control? This is a really neat wheel. And if anybody can put the... where you can find this in the chat, that would be great. I know it's on the internet. It's feelings-wheel is, I think, where I found this. Okay, so if I'm feeling angry, Emily T. Thank you, Emily. I'll get to you in just a moment. If I'm feeling angry, that's a blanket word for let down, humiliated, bitter, mad, aggressive, frustrated, distant or critical. There's your semi categories. And then if I'm feeling frustrated, am I infuriated or annoyed? And it really helps you nail down what is it exactly that you're feeling. Emily, what do you have for us?
Hi, my name is Emily, codependent. And I was just wondering if you could go a little bit deeper on the judgment. I'm new to CODA. and how I can see how I can be so judgmental and so righteous, and then at the same time, really compliant, you know, in and wanting approval and getting like completely selling myself out and abandoning myself, but being so righteous at the same time. Just wondering if you could speak a little bit to that, please.
Know it. Yes, I can. That is what I found is, and by the way, somebody just put in the chat area, somebody put the link to that feelings wheel. Please download that for yourself, just for yourself or your sponsees or whoever you want to download it for. It's incredibly handy. Okay. And I knew somebody would come up with that. What I've found, Emily, is that if I'm faced with a situation, I go in with one pattern and I go out with another. If I go in to a pattern with control, what you said, people believe people are incapable of caring for themselves, for example, you're going to go in and fix that situation. If somebody comes up against you, then you might drop into low self-esteem, judge yourself harshly is never good enough. If somebody calls your bluff, for example, you might drop into low self-esteem. You might drop into compliance. But it seems like you'll start with one pattern and end up with another. Your reaction reaction would be the first pattern, and then your response would be the second pattern. And let me check the chat really quick. Yeah, the feelings wheel is there. Thank you so much for pulling that up. Does that answer your question, Emily, or is that good enough?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective as kind of a reaction depending on what, how the other person reacts to my control. And that gives me a lot to think about. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I would come into a situation around my family, usually low self-esteem. Judge harshly as never being good enough. And then I would end up in compliance, compromise my own value and integrity to avoid rejection and anger. That's the easy way. Okay. I never had to go up against my family, state my opinion, hold my ground, never had to do any of that because I always lost. That's what I knew. You can go ahead and do that, Karen, but you're going to lose. Okay. So, you know, why bother? Excuse me. Anyone else have a pattern that or a question that they're really interested in right now? Okay, just raise your little hand when you want to. Minimize, alter, or deny how they truly feel. Grace, what do you have for us?
This talk about fortuitous. I'm telling you, deny what you just finished saying. Something about denying your feelings. I just had a rejection, and I'm like over here trying to make believe it's all okay and everything is fine. And I'm honestly so hurt, rejected, and sad. But I want to go to that other place of like, it's not happening. It's okay. I want to be the bigger person. It's going to be fine to feel rejected.
Yeah. You know?
And being here, and you just finished reading that, and I'm like, talk about just right on time. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You know, Grace, it's funny what we do to ourselves. We know that we're denying. We know something's wrong, but we have to make it work in our heads so that we can keep the relationship going, because it's scarier to lose that relationship and have to start another one. My sponsor calls it laziness. She says, you know, you're not so much in control as you are lazy, or as in avoidance rather, as you are lazy. You're not scared. You're lazy. You don't want to have to go get another job because you don't like your boss. There's a lot involved in that. You got to do an interview, get all dressed up. Maybe the new people that you're going to be working with are going to be worse. It's the same thing with a relationship. You don't know what's going to come next. You just know you're going to be alone. And that's not good. And that's why we minimize, alter, deny how we feel. We make it work. Lynn, what do you have, please?
Yeah, I just have someone in the chat asking if you can share this in the chat, this document that you're sharing.
Share what is in the chat? Is that what you said?
They want you to share the document you're screen sharing in the chat, if you could.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can. Yeah. This is from what I wrote about. Is that right? Yes. I'm created this presentation is called Take My Advice, I'm Not Using It. And this, I just went down all the patterns and talked about each one and gave examples of what I meant by that. Okay. Thank you, Lynn. Kathy, what do you have for us?
Hi, I'm Karen. Yeah, I loved her share. I got so much out of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Karen, I've got a very strange pattern, and maybe you can help me understand it. And I don't understand it myself. And I really hope I don't sound like I love myself either, because I don't. I struggle with esteem. But this is a pattern, and I see it play over and over and over again in the workplace. When I am completely giving of my best and thinking, okay, I want to do what's right for myself, for the team, I want to, you know, and I'm quite visionary, so ideas and concepts come very easily, but I'm truly coming from a good place and trying to really give of my best, that's when things go wrong. It's just really strange. And people come down really hard on me, and bosses see me as threatening when I'm really, don't mean to be threatening. This is, and I'm really struggling with that pattern, because I'm not saying I'm perfect. I know my faults. I can be controlling. You know, I can sometimes play manager when it's not my place to, but it's often when I'm really, really thinking, all right, I'm going to just give this situation 100%, and then things go terribly wrong. Thank you.
Sure, Kathy. Thank you for asking that. You know, when we try so hard to either make something happen or make it not happen, we're using our patterns. If you're using a pattern, you're not acting in a healthy manner. You're either in acceptance, patience, and tolerance, or you're practicing a pattern. But you also might be practicing a pattern on the wrong person. You might be, wait a minute. That's okay. I wanted to bring something up real quickly about levels of friendship. I'm going to put this one up because we tend to think that everybody's on our side until they prove themselves to be not on our side.
Yeah.
Trusting people too much. Okay. So we're pulling everybody into a six when they actually belong at a one. One is a superficial, then we have casual, then companionship, then friendship, then intimate relationships, and then a committed partnership. I would start everybody at a six and then back them up as they disappointed me. If I started everybody at a one, then they would not affect me in any way. Let me show you what I mean by that. Each relationship starts out at a one. It's never the goal to move people forward. Leave them in the category where they belong. One, superficial. This is insignificant. And this is where everybody will start. Even if you've known them for years, start them at a one right now. These people don't affect your life one way or the other. Level one is for people you've just met. It's also for people who have been moved back from higher levels. The people here are strictly surface relationships. You have no expectations of them, and there are no obligations either way. Keep your personal information to yourself. If you had these people at a one, Kathy, they wouldn't affect you one way or the other. Their opinions are their opinions. Yours are your opinions. You state your opinion and let it go. That's, you don't need to do anything else. If they have a different opinion, that's fine. Mm. They have the right to be wrong. Okay. Number two, casual. This person has moved forward from level one due to common ground, such as coworkers, classmates, recovery people. During this probation stage, and this is the most important one, Kathy, you begin to evaluate this person to determine whether they should move forward to a higher level. Actively look for and don't dismiss or make excuses for red flags. That's what we're calling minimize, alter, or deny how you're truly feeling. Okay. How do they treat animals? That's a big one for me. Any mistreatment of animals, they're in the don't column right away. How do they talk to their mother? That's a big one. How do they talk about their ex? Are they a victim? Are you their only friend? That's dangerous right there. Do they criticize you? Do they try to fix you? Do they try to isolate you? Remember that you've only met their representative. Kathy, the people that you're dealing with, you don't know who they really are. They're showing you who they want you to think they are.
But Karen, I'm not that trusting. So I'm quite difficult to get close to. I'm just saying that when I'm coming from this place, I'm really giving of my best, but I'm not necessarily trusting of them. You know what I mean? I'm not necessarily letting them get close.
Okay. You know? So then they shouldn't really be having an effect on you at all. So I would kind of reevaluate that because they're getting close to your emotions.
Okay.
You know, or this wouldn't bother you. That's kind of what I'm saying. Thank you, Kathy, very much. Lynn, what do you have?
Sorry, another in the chat, along with the pattern spreadsheet, someone would like the Take My Advice document, and I would just love to have this Levels of Friendship sheet. Oh, sure.
Absolutely. I'm going to put my email in the chat for everyone so that I can send this to you. This changed everything for me. My sponsor gave me her version. It just blew me away. I was going backwards, starting everybody to six and then moving them out. That's wrong. Start them at a one and then move them forward as they show you that they're trustworthy. Oh, did I put that right? I did. Yes, please. Go ahead and I will send anything that you want to you. I'll give you the Take My Advice, the Levels of Friendship, whatever you want. Cece, what do you have?
Thank you so much for all of this, Karen. This is like light bulbs just going off in my brain. So a question, though, is so what if you are married and you have kids and you know that you did this all wrong, right?
Yeah. That's a tough one, Cece, because it feels like you're trapped, but you're not. The options that you have probably aren't very appealing. You might have a loss in finances for a while. You might have difficulties for a while. You might be alone for a while. These fears are keeping you right where you stand, and they're going to keep you paralyzed. It takes a lot of guts to change your situation. Have you worked the steps? Let me get some information on you real quick.
I am working the steps, and I will say I am just starting, but in terms of my actual circumstances, my partner is also in recovery, and he finally heard me when I said I need space. So we are living separately right now.
Excellent. This is perfect, Cece. This is your time to work on yourself. Work all of the steps before you make any decisions about this relationship, okay? Because your perception might be skewed. I would almost tell you, you are probably skewed. Mine was, until I started looking at things the way they actually are and deciding whether the person I was with was a good person. It never mattered to me whether they were okay or whether I liked them. It just mattered that they liked me. Okay, so you're going to learn a lot about yourself through these steps. You're going to learn why you do what you do, and you might still be able to stay in this relationship. It might work. If you're both in recovery, your odds are really good. So, but don't do anything until you finish with the steps. Okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a big one right there. Okay. So there's the Levels of Friendship. I'm going to scroll it down just a little bit so you can see the rest of it. Okay. Here, number two, this is especially important. You've only met their representative. They have met your representative. Okay, you are showing them who you want them to see until you get healthy in CODA. after 90 days, recheck for red flags. If you're considering moving them forward, and check your own behavior too, are you being authentic? Number three is companionship. It's just a companion, okay? These are levels. This level begins your one-on-one relationship with someone. It's been at least 90 days. They're on probation. Platonic roommate should be at least three before you consider moving in with them. How many people have had bad experiences with people you thought you knew when you moved in? For romantic relationships at level three, you might start deciding whether this is a sacred or devoted relationship, or is it just a friendship? You can begin to share personal information at this level and see what they do with it. Do they try to fix it? Do they minimize it? If your personal information is shared with others, move this person back to a two. Your relationships must be equal at each level. If your prospect has you at a two, you must also move them back to a two. If you've got them at a six and they've got you at a two, you're out of balance. Move them back to a two. That's where they belong. Don't be in a hurry to move someone forward. That's a nice level. And here we go, four, five, and six. Number four. Your friend has made it through the dissection of levels one, two, and three. This level is a partnership between two people who value each other equally. It's a good time to evaluate your friend and make sure that you are a four with them too. If they are treating you like a one, move them back to a one as well. Codependents are famous for having unequal partners. This is more intimate than your other relationships. This is the person who feels safe to you, and you naturally spend more time with them than others. Your sponsor will often fit in here while you're working the steps. 5, intimate relationship. This is an equally deep partnership with shared passions, trust, and respect. Your partner must also have you at a 5. You can sit in a room without talking and be completely comfortable. Time spent together builds more trust and respect, not less. When you discuss deeply private information, you know your privacy will be respected and won't be weaponized. You can confidently take bigger risks with each other. This is a true companion. And then 6, the big banana. This is the only level where marriage can be considered. This is a sacrosanct, which means inviolate, pure, protected, secure, and shielded, and fearless relationship. You both share responsibility for the relationship, and you honor each other equally. Your partner must also have you at a 6. This is the level. This level is for that one person you can honestly say you want to be with for as long as you're both alive. Now, this is where I used to start everybody, and then I would move them back to a 1. That's backwards, okay? Try not to do that. And I will give this to yes, Wendy S., I put my email in the chat so that you, I can send this to you, and I'm going to put it in there again. Okay. Special K was my nickname in rehab. Thought it was a compliment, but it wasn't. And 2-10-2 is my sobriety date. So there we go. And what am I trying to share here? Let's go back to the patterns. Yes. There we go. I was on denial, but if anybody wants to talk about anything, just let me know. Sarah, I have another half an hour, right? I think that's true.
Yes, you do.
Yee-hoo. Thank you so much. Whoopsie.
Thank you.
All right. Whoopsie, what have you got for us?
Hi. I wanted to ask, where do you start with people that are in recovery? For instance, a Power of 5 group. Where do you start there? Like, I have this message inside that I'm supposed to trust people.
Yeah.
And it gets me in trouble. So, thank you.
Yeah, that doesn't work out. When you start people at a 6, that's no good. Start everybody at a 1. Absolutely everybody starts at a 1. And while you're in this group, you can just start taking a look at these people and listen to them. Really listen to what they're saying. Listen to what kind of person they are, especially in a workbook group, because they might want you to feel like they're more advanced than they really are, if their pride is a problem. If they're really talk about honest things and get down and dirty and things like that, and they don't try to fix you, go ahead and move them to a 2, but take a look at a 1 first. Okay. Thank you so much, Whoopsie. Love your name. Wish that was my name. Whoopsie. That would solve a lot of problems. Okay. Kathy, what do you have?
Hi. Yeah. Karen, thanks so much for those reminders. There's a lot of people that I definitely need to put back to a 1 or 2, because I realize, especially someone I really like, and we definitely were at a sort of 5 or 6 for quite a while, and that was really, really great. And now it's like I've remained in a 5 or 6, and they're kind of back to a 1 or 2, you know, because of circumstances and et cetera. So, yeah, I think actually, I can't remember, but I think it was John Gray's work or something that also spoke about the different levels that you can put people back to. And then sometimes what happens is they then put in the work again, and you can get, back to another level. But yeah, I really love your reminders there. So thank you for that. Yeah. There's quite a few of those I need to put into drop quite a few levels. Yeah. Thanks.
I didn't know that. I honestly wish I had known this stuff earlier, but on the other hand, I was probably arrogant enough not to use it. So, you know, it came at the right time. Ray, what do you have?
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for this. I actually walked in. I had to do something. I walked in. I caught only the last part from level three on. First question is this from a book or is this your own observation?
No, it's my own, actually. Yeah. This is The World According to Karen. And in Karen land, this is how it works. Now, this is derived from something that my sponsor gave me. She derived hers from something else that somebody else had written. So I kind of took the information from both of those and my own experience and came up with this.
Okay. And then you said if I want to get the first three, I just send you an email and you'll send it to me? Or
I'll send you the whole thing. I'll send you the whole presentation. Sure. My email is in the chat.
What do you mean the whole presentation?
I made a presentation about this. It's got the slides that you can use if you want to present it to somebody else. Please feel free to use this. And any information anybody gets from me, please share it with whoever you think can benefit from it. And I will also give you what I've written about it.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much. And what do I call this? Or you would know?
The levels of friendship.
Levels of friendship. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Ray. Okay, Katie L.
Hi, I was just wondering on the level of friendship, if you have something for butt flags, because a lot of my issues is with my family and I cut them off and I don't know how to start a relationship with other people because I just either do the Heisman or I put them in a six. Right. So I was wondering if you have like something with butt flags or something.
So Katie, let me understand. Are you talking about your family where you already have a relationship with them or a brand new relationship?
So that's a very good question. Maybe just to sort out because I have a big family, so I don't have friends. I have my family members, and I realize they're not healthy. So when I try to get new friends, I don't know what to look out for.
Ah, okay. Yes, we've got some red flags in here. Number two, the casual part. Now, real quick, there we go. Everybody starts at a level one, even your family. Everybody you know right now, everybody you're in a relationship with right now starts at a one and take a look at them. Okay. Just take a look at them. This is not so that you can judge them and judge them better or worse or lower or higher, nothing like that. You just want to decide where this person belongs in this level. Okay. The red flags that you can look for, and there are tons of them. I'm sure I don't have any, all of them here. How do they treat animals is a big one for me. If they're willing to mistreat an animal, they will mistreat you too. Don't worry about that. How do they talk to their mother or about their mother? Because that's their biggest love representative. That's why they learned how to love. So if they talk about her like a dog, guess what? They're not going to treat you very well. How do they talk about their ex? Because they're going to talk about you that same way once you break up. Are they a victim? Is everybody dumping on them all the time? Do they want you to fix them? Or, you know, do they want you to commiserate with them? These people, if they're a victim, they're looking for a sounding board. They want to ruminate with you. They just want to talk about it over and over and over. They don't want help. They just want to tell you all about how much of a victim they are. Are you their only friend? If you're their only friend, that raises a lot of questions that normally ID channel will answer for you. Do they criticize you? Even a little bit, okay? Little bitty jabs. If they start, you know, once in a while, they might accidentally criticize you. But if there's little jabs all the time, yeah, don't do that, okay? Don't do that one. Don't try to fix them. Do they try to fix you? You should not wear that. By the way, if somebody starts out a sentence with "you should," just go ahead and whatever else they say after that, just don't even bother listening to it. Fill in the blank with "be more like me." You should be more like me, okay? Because they're using their history to judge you, not yours. Do they try to isolate you? This is the danger zone. If they try to isolate you, there's a reason for that. They need you to be vulnerable and not have an exit plan. Okay. So that's what we're talking about. There's tons of red flags. I disregarded, minimized, altered, and denied so many red flags just so I could keep the relationship going. And that's the only reason I did that. So thank you for that question. Lisa P.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for your service. Great to hear you. Wanted to hear your thoughts on, so I have left my marriage and am now co-parenting. So obviously have taken the six relationship way back. My co-parent, it's an untrustworthy person. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of working to find my voice and, you know, do the, you should be more like me, all that stuff. But any thoughts on that? And just because I forget, even though it's been, time has passed, I still keep forgetting and keep, you know, expecting them to be different or looking for results that aren't there and not being in that denial, even though I've left. So any thoughts on that, knowing that at the end of the day, I still need to work with this person for the benefit and the, you know, the ultimate goal of raising a healthy, happy kid.
Right. I get that. Okay. I statements are really, really important. Okay. I statements. I would appreciate it if you would, rather than you didn't do this. You told me, you know, that the you, if you say the word you, might as well point your finger as well.
Yeah.
You know, puts people on the defense. Use I statements. Write down what you're going to say before you talk to him. That can be really, really helpful. Write down your I statement ahead of time so that it's completely non-offensive, meaning if you go on the offense, they will go on the defense. And if they have to go on the defense, best defense is a good offense. They're coming right back at you. And they're going to strike to wound. You know, it's not going to be pleasant. So remember your I statements. Remember that this person that you met is not the person you ended up with. Okay, it seems like if you're trying to get that person to go back to the person you just met, his representative, that's why people stay in relationships too long. They expect that it's going to go back to that person they met. I want to go back to that person, you know, back to the way it was when we started, but that's not the real person. That's a fake relationship. Deal with the person as he is now, not as he was then. I statements. I hope that helps. And good luck with that. Ari.
Excellent. Thanks.
You're welcome. REC.
The low self-esteem patterns, one of them is having healthy priorities and boundaries, setting healthy priorities and being able to complete projects and tasks. Mm-hmm. So procrastination, distraction, all those sorts of things. Is that something that you have some experience with in dealing with, and how do you work that within program?
I sure do. I have experience with all of these, almost all of the patterns I used at whatever times that I thought that they would be helpful. Practice. And what I started to do, Ari, when I got into recovery and started recognizing that I used patterns, is I would stop and say, what would a grown-up do in this circumstance? What would a grown-up would do? Because I have to remember that my patterns, my use of patterns, those are my childhood skills. This is what I used as a child to either continue the relationship at home, stay out of trouble, try to keep myself from feeling sad or whatever. These are the patterns that I used. Recognizing that, and that all of these patterns, those are your defects, those are your shortcomings. These are the things you're trying to get rid of, because they're actually not healthy behaviors. This is the unhealthy version of yourself. So if you're doing your 10th step at night, which means a daily inventory of the last 24 hours, take a look at some of these patterns and see, did I do these today? In the blue book, under step 10, there's a paragraph full of questions, which is really, really helpful. You can ask yourself, did I do this today? And if so, why so? Why did I overreact to that person when they asked me if I wanted butter for my bread? Why did I think they were calling me fat? You know, recognize that you're the sick person in the room. Usually your perceptions are the ones that are taking you down. Find out which patterns that you use and talk to your sponsor and work all the steps. It changes everything. It really does. Thank you for that question, Ari. Ray H.
Hi again. Okay, so something really interesting popped up. I believe it was number 3 where it talked about isolating. So my question is, could we apply these rules to groups, not just individual, but groups? Because my experience has been that there are lots of groups. Like when I was much younger, I actually got involved into in some sort of a semi-cultish group. Where they want you to only be with them and everyone else is this and we're this. And then later on, I also experimented with a few religions that I noticed practice the same type of belief. I respect all religions, but a lot of them think that they're the only ones and everyone else is going to hell and they're going to heaven and all that. So this isolation, I'm curious if in your, the way you have it here, is this specifically for judging individuals? Or could this be used for judging groups that we want to join as well?
I would definitely use this for joining groups. Absolutely. Take a really good look. This is mostly for individuals, Ray. I've never been asked that question, but you can use it for everything. Truly. It is the way to go about things. Start at a 1. Don't start at a 6. Just ask yourself if you're trusting them too easily or moving them in too quickly. And the thing with codependence is we try to make it work. We'll try to blame ourselves for our fears for not wanting to join this group or however, whatever our fears are. But if we look at these people or these groups in a observational mode, just as a spectator, go in as a spectator and really check them out and see what they're all about, what they're really all about. Listen, really listen to what's being said and not what your perception might be. I think that'd be the best way to go about it. And yeah, I would definitely use this for groups. Sure. That's a great question. Thank you.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. And somebody in the chat says another phrase instead of you should do this or that, another phrase to ignore is if I were you, I'd. Okay, well, you're not me. So I'm going to be a grown up and make my own decisions. Codependents don't make their own decisions, generally speaking. So that's another one to watch. Ute, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you? Yeah, my name is Uta, and I'm just new in CODA, and I wanted to ask you a question about the patterns. Mm-hmm. So what I notice about myself is I'm hypercritical. So I would go, say, to one meeting, and I say, oh, yeah, maybe I want to have that as my home group. And then I think, oh, they're not working the steps properly. Nobody's working the steps. And I go to another meeting and then I know some person from work there, uh-huh. like from my work. And I know I can't go there. I'd love it as a home meeting, but then I go into another meeting and they're like, oh, I think they're stealing money. Oh, I think they're stealing some of the donations. Well, I'm not going to involve with them because it's going to rub off on me and I want to start stealing. So what's going on?
You're in control.
I can't find a home group.
Right. You're in control. I would very definitely put your own self aside. You're in your way. They have an expression, I've got to get out of my own way. And that's, you're right there. Don't go to those meetings and take a look around and find out what's wrong with it. Don't look for the differences, look at the similarities. Sit down and just in the meeting, you're going to hear things that you need to hear. Everything else is, you're either going to recognize it later or it wasn't for you. Sometimes we can't identify with everybody, but yeah, then really let go of that control. Things are going to be as they are. It says in the book to let your life unfold as it is, live life as it is. Don't worry about those other people. You're in there for your own recovery. Okay. Disregard all that other stuff. It seems to me like you're trying to figure out a way to keep from getting healthy. Okay.
So okay, thank you.
I don't know what I mean by that, and good luck on your journey. Let's see, right. Sarah, Jess, what do you have here? Sarah, Bobera. Sarah, see your hand up twice. Sounds urgent. Maybe not. Cut in whenever you need to. Chris, what do you have? Uh-oh, am I muted?
No, this is the real Sarah Jess. We had a glitch on Zoom, okay. And many people came in, signed with the name Sarah Jess.
Cool. So
if you are one of them, if you see yourself and wish to rename, you can find yourself, hopefully, and click in the upper right of your box and hit rename. Hopefully that'll work. Otherwise, we'll just continue the best we can.
Okay, how exciting. All right, Chris, what do you have for us? Chris, will you unmute yourself? Okay, Emily T. Oh, we got Chris. Chris, what do you have? Huh. Okay, I'm going to mute Chris. How about Patricia?
Hi, thank you for the tip. I guess I was one of the Sarah Jesses. So I renamed. So I'm less than 30 days into CODA. And also in Tahoe, by the way. And my question to you is, you know, as I was new to CODA, I was reading a lot about the patterns that are in the PDF that you're presenting here. But what really interested me were also there's the recovery patterns for the codependent. So kind of like you were here and we want to strive to be there, right? Mm-hmm. The question to you is, beyond sponsorship, which I'm finding extremely difficult, and groups to find, what are ways that you would suggest for personal learnings to how to shift from one box of this pattern to the other? Because I'm finding it difficult to find out what those specific tools are by reading the books and the material.
Cool. Let's see. You're in Tahoe. I'm unfortunately going to be leaving for the East Coast this weekend. However, maybe it would be a good idea for us to team up. My email is right there in the chat.
Thank you.
And let me know. We'll figure it out together. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious and wanting to learn more materials of how to shift from one pattern to the next. Right.
So. It's you have to work the steps. That's my answer. You have to work the steps, and these things will be revealed to you as you go along.
Okay.
Quite a journey. It really is. And it's a good one, but it's just, I know, how do I make myself feel this way if I feel that way? You can't do it.
May I ask another question, right? Uh-huh. So in the beginning of the book, it talks a little bit about how we adapt coping mechanisms as child and take those on to adults. And I'll be honest, when I first was reading some of the codependent patterns, I'm like, yeah, I'm that, but I'm this in recovery. I'm this in recovery. So I guess my question is it normal for a codependent to actually adopt some of those recovery elements as coping mechanisms as a youth, right? And not that I have all the recovery or coping things, but I was just curious if that's, you know, because I was trying to rationalize myself that I wasn't, but obviously I know I am. And I was thinking that, you know, maybe that is normal that you find some of these recovery patterns as your coping elements because you are a codependent.
That is true. We use whatever we think will work. Okay. We use these things to make ourselves feel differently. Just like an alcoholic uses alcohol, just like a person who is addicted to a person uses that person for their higher power. And back to what I said in the beginning, what drives our need to control and avoid others? Many of us ask, aren't some of these behaviors healthy? It depends on your motivation. And here it is. The answer can be found in the motivation for your behaviors.
Right.
You're either acting out of love or you're acting out of fear. Those are the only two. It's multiple choice. There's only two. I'm not good at those. If I only have a 50-50 chance, I'll get it wrong. So that's what sponsors are for.
Got it. Well, what I learned in one of the readings yesterday, while fear, but I was wondering, for me, I couldn't figure out, but really it says fear and shame. So I don't know if that's because shame is somewhat different than fear in some ways. So I guess my question is it really just fear and love, or is there shame and other elements in there as well?
Well, shame is a reaction to it. Okay. I would advise you to get that blue book. And
I got it.
commonly asked questions. They have specific areas in there about fear, about shame, about all kinds of things in there.
And that's why I asked, is I read that and it talks a lot about shame coupled with fear. And so that's why my question to you was, is it really only love and fear on motivations, or are there other elements in there, drivers, right, like shame?
Fear and shame go together.
Okay.
So it's fear or love, because it does, you're not always being in shame when you're afraid of something, but usually. Okay. So it's just not across the board.
Shame is what drives you to fear. Got
there
it.
Thank you. Thank Thanks. You. Very well put. Okay. Kalpana, did I say that right?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I am Kalpana from India. I'm new to CODA, but I'm on 12-step program. My question is, I lost my spouse last year. And he was an addict, but sober, without program. And it was very, very difficult life with him. Very difficult. Like many times I decided I don't want to live with him. But now I'm missing him so badly. And I'm just, remember all his good things. And I think I have this pattern of... whatever I have, I don't like it. And when it's not with me, I'm sad, or I'm creeping about that things, that, oh, shit, I should have been like this. I should have been like that. Mm-hmm. Because my mother's and my relationship was also not so good from childhood. Now I improved it with the help of my another 12-step program. But I learned from childhood. It's difficult, but you have to, live with it, something like that. So how to come out of this pain and agony and missing him, sorrow?
Okay, this is going to sound strange, but write down a gratitude list. And this gratitude list might include the bad things that aren't happening anymore. That's a gratitude list. It might include... If you said you're new, I think, to CODA, once you get finished working the steps, you will come to realize why you were with that person to begin with. And there's gratitude there. It doesn't matter how many years you spent with that person. You learned a lot. And there was a reason that they were in your life. Maybe they brought you children that you love. I don't know. But there is a reason to be grateful for every single thing and every single person that happens in your life, because you're learning from them. So I would write a gratitude list. The good and bad parts of that person are still something to be grateful for. Okay? Start there. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm also looking for a CODA sponsor. I'm not getting one. Oh, if anyone is interested, please send me a message.
Great. Thank you so much. If anybody wants to sponsor Kalpana, she's new, right for the pickings. So go in there and get her. Let's see, who do we have? Emily T.
Hey again. I have a quick question about the hyper. I'm trying to lower my hand, sorry. One of the patterns that I'm struggling with is taking on the feeling, especially my children.
Oh, yes.
I have small children, and also in my profession, I work in a healing profession, and but my children is probably the biggest one, and just accepting that I don't have control over them, even though I have some type of control at this point, because they're 4 and 8, with putting disciplining them, but yeah, I don't know if you can speak to a little bit about the hyper. I think it's listed as like hypervigilance and taking on the feelings.
Yes. Yeah. This is now the patterns are, I just lost my train of thought. Boop, there it went. Hypervigilant regarding the feelings of others. The reason that you're hypervigilant to your children's feelings is because of your childhood. It's reminding you of something back there. If you work all of the steps I mean, really work them. Don't, you know, that if you immerse yourself in your past, dig around in there, find out what happened and why you're feeling this way, it will solve that problem. But the things that you're feeling about your kids and stuff, you're actually feeling about yourself. Okay. Get in touch with that a little bit. Good luck. That's going to be quite a journey.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Melanie.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Sure. Isn't it time for the next session?
Sure is.
Bummer.
Darn.
I hope you can stick around. And I did open up chat again if you want to put any comments in chat to people.
Yeah, sure. And email me, you know, if there's something, like we've had two more raised hands, email me and I'd be more than happy to chat with you.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Thanks. It was fun.
And thank you, everybody. We would like to have someone read the promises, please. Raise your hand, Melanie. Would you be willing to read the promises?
Me, Melanie?
I don't know. A Melanie that raised their hand.
Oh, that wasn't me, but I'm happy to read them.
Oh, Elisa has their hand up.
Happy to read them.
Thank you.
The 12 Promises of Codependence Anonymous. I can expect a miraculous change in my life by working the program of Codependence Anonymous. As I make an honest effort to work the 12 steps and follow the 12 traditions, number one, I know a new sense of belonging. The feelings of emptiness and loneliness will disappear. Two, I am no longer controlled by my fears. I overcome my fears and act with courage, integrity, and dignity. Three, I know a new freedom. Four, Four, I release myself from worry, guilt, and regret about my past and present. I'm aware enough not to repeat it. Five, I know a new love and acceptance of myself and others. I feel genuinely lovable, loving, and loved. Six, I learn to see myself as equal to others. My new and renewed relationships are all with equal partners. Do you mind flipping the slide? Thank you. Oops. Oh, sorry. I lost you guys. Hold on 1 second. All right. Seven, I'm capable of developing and maintaining loving and healthy relationships. The need to control and manipulate others will disappear as I learn to trust those who are trustworthy. Eight, I learn that it is possible to mend, to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. I have the choice of communicating with my family in a way which is safe for me and respectful of them. Nine, I acknowledge that I am a unique and precious creation. 10, I no longer need to rely solely on others to provide my sense of worth. 11, I trust the guidance I receive from my higher power and come to believe in my own capabilities. And 12, I gradually experience serenity, strength, and spiritual growth in my daily life. Thanks.
Thank you. And let us close with the Coda closing prayer and the longer version of the Serenity Prayer. Please remain on mute so that it doesn't get chaotic, and you may follow along if you'd like. We thank our higher power for all that we have received from this meeting. As we close, may we take with us the wisdom, love, acceptance, and hope of recovery. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Grant me patience with the changes that take time, appreciation of all that I have, tolerance of those with different struggles, and strength to get up and try again one day at a time. Thanks again. And our next session will start 1 minute ago. So let's go right on into it.
Sarah, you're still recording from the last one. Just letting you know.
Thank you. Okay, let's stop it.